This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 33, Bounce Back Ability. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the aftermath of a failure. How do you deal with it? How do you bounce back? And how do you make up words like bounce back ability? We also talk about other cricket coaching stuff. We talk about changing angles and pace for spin bowlers, and we help someone who used to be able to drive through the covers, but now all he seems to do is hit it through the leg side. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, no matter who you are, and no matter where you are. And you might be asking who I am if this is the first time you listen to this show. Well, my name's David Hinchliffe and I look after things here. And there's two other very fine chaps on this show with me. The first of which is the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garrus. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much, David.
And a man I also enjoy speaking to as well. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
Are we all feeling enthusiastic despite the fact that the season's drawing to a close?
Absolutely, yeah. 2 or 3 weeks to go and it's starting to wrap up, isn't it?
It is for us, yeah. Although, as always happens this time of year, I look at our website statistics and Australia starts to leap up as the UK and the other Northern Hemisphere countries just tail off a little bit around about this time of year, as you would expect, as people start to think, well, I'm going to finish my cricket for another year. So it's it gets to the end of August and people start to tail away, especially with us, where we've had our season finishes at the end of August, our league season finishes at the end of August, my club team, and we have had a pretty terrible season, the first 11. If you measure success by the success of the first 11 and you've been listening into the podcast, you've been hearing occasional updates about us losing games. Well, we managed to lose every game bar two all season. And one 2020 game we won and one 50 over game we won. And that's it, with two games left. And we were training last night and there was a definite end of term, oh, well, it's all over now, we've been relegated type of feeling to it. And so I was thinking, have you ever been in a situation like this? And if you have, what do you do to sort of rally the troops and get people focused for the few games that where it doesn't really matter that much in terms of league performance and then moving on to into the next season?
Well, I think the way to do it, and I'm going to take my words really from Duncan Fletcher, is that I remember a time where we were being absolutely hammered by the Aussies and all he did was project forward, and he projected forward to the next Ashes series, as it was, and the next Ashes series, England ended up winning. But he talked about every challenge and every competition that you're having with an opposition Australian player, you are taking that into the next Ashes series. So whether we win the next game in that present Ashes or not is irrelevant. What you're doing is you're taking every challenge and every competition and every competitive situation into the next series. And for you, David, with your team, it's into the following year. And so you make the choice, really, whether you want to compete hard for the remainder of the season or the series in the one that Fletcher was talking about, or whether you give it up. And what was great in the last Test match that we saw, which we still lost because Australia were phenomenal at that time, but a couple of people started to do some things that then, by the time they played against Australia in 2009, the starting point was at the Sydney Cricket Ground. And I think that's crucial. So to me, it's about words. It's about language again. It always is, I suppose. But I would be projecting forward and saying, you know, these last three games are all about what we take into next year. And we have the choice of starting with on a bit of a high, or we have a choice of starting with nothing in the bank like we've got presently. And that would be the way that I'd go about it.
Yeah, and Lavers, I know a couple of weeks ago you were talking about how it's a good opportunity to try something maybe that you didn't have the confidence to try before because it's a new thing, but now there's less of an emphasis on the result. You can build up some confidence in maybe something new which you hadn't tried before.
Yeah, it could be an opportunity to build that confidence for next season, and if it means you're going down a division, you want to try and go in there with some kind of some kind of confidence from performances. And obviously, if you're down the bottom end, you probably haven't had a load of performances that are going to sort of reflect and give people that that belief, even though they're dropping down a level. The other thing is, at some stage, and whether it's in 2 years' time or 3 years' time or 10 years' time, at some stage you'd be thinking, I want to get back up to that level as a coach. I want to get back up to that level as players. And you want those guys to be confident in their abilities when they get to that level again. And even if they leave this season and one guy scores a 50 and it gives him that belief that when he gets back there, he can do it and he can score runs, or someone goes and takes five, or someone really sets the standard in the day for the field, or someone does something that makes them feel that they do belong at that level, then that's something they can hold on to. And it's something that will not only give them that belief when they're in the division below, but when they do make it back up to that division again, it's going to give them that feeling that they do belong and the feeling that they can compete with the players around them.
Well, it's not been all bad, of course. We have had success in the second 11, and we've had lots of young players come through. So I guess it also depends on how you're measuring things as well. If you just look at the results, you could say, well, it's been a very poor season. But if you look at other areas, you can say, well, you know, it's not, results haven't gone our way, but so much else has. So you have to be spending time looking at the whole picture rather than just what happens on the Saturday afternoon with one of several teams who play under the club name of West of Scotland.
You do, and I suppose the next stage really then is converting some of those wins that you've had this year with your young players and making sure that you nurture them again next year, and also having an idea on when those young players are going to actually bear fruit in the first 11 as well. Because whilst it's great to develop and sort of talk about development, we've also got to have one eye on the fact that development's got to get to a point where it puts performances down. And, you know, so working towards that over the next few years is really important. And you'll probably find that the results, because of the development you've done with young players, are going to pick up within the top team.
How did that feel, Gareth? Pretty tough question and probably tough to answer, but how did that feel in that situation, which is probably, I imagine, it's 100 times worse when you're in an England team, which is getting absolutely hammered, than it is when you're in a club or a school or an academy side, which is getting hammered.
Yeah, I mean, it is tough because obviously you've got more scrutiny, I suppose, and scrutiny coming from all over the place, and I think what made it really difficult that particular time when we lost the Ashes 5-0 was that, after I think the fourth test match where we lost, the ECB decided to call a review, and the review, ultimately any review that goes on, has its outcome pretty much sorted before you start it. So we all knew the outcome was going to be that ultimately Fletch wasn't going to be the coach, but what it did really was galvanise the team in that respect, because we wanted to make sure that whatever time we had left with Fletch, that we gave it our all, and you'll remember that the subsequent one day series we ended up winning against New Zealand and Australia, who were two really good sides. So I think in every situation, going back to your question, it is difficult, but there's always something to aim for, and our aim in that context was to make sure that Duncan Fletcher went out on a high, or as good a high as he possibly could, rather than being remembered as a coach necessarily that lost 5-0 in Australia, which, you know, great coaches do. Andy Flower recently lost 5-0 in Australia because Australia got everything right, and that's what happened. A great coach in Darren Lehman's going to lose this series. You know, that's the way it goes. But we found something which was a motivator, and I think what you're looking for and what Sam's talked about is having a motivation for these next few games, which takes you into next year, whether it be trying something else new or building some momentum. So when you hit the ground next year, you're running in the new league, you start off going really, really well. And that's the crucial thing. You find something, irrespective of how much hassle or grief or, you know, how troublesome it is or whatever the case may be, you find something that gives you a focus to look forward.
And Levis, have you got a time when you that you recall when everything just went wrong and there was a way out? You found a way out of it.
Yeah, plenty from when I was playing. I can remember loads of days where everything was going.
Not necessarily days, but you know, series or seasons or competitions.
Yeah, obviously you have days, and especially with with cricket at school, there are a number of competitions where they're cup-based, and you obviously find yourself in situations where inevitably, if you don't win the whole thing, you're going out at some stage. And no matter how much your focus is on improving cricketers, there's going to be a focus from the boys on winning tournaments, and that's what they want to do. They want to win games, and that's an easier way for them to measure their success. And you do get yourself in situations like that, and inevitably you will lose games along the way. And there will be an element of dwelling on it for a while. And the quicker you can kind of take yourself away from that and accept that something's happened, then what you've tried to do has either worked or it hasn't worked, depending on how you're measuring your success and what your targets were. But moving on and looking ahead and starting your planning for the next process is the next key. But some people say you've got to forget what's happened. But I generally say be aware of what's happened. Be aware of why you got to a situation where you were. You don't need to spend all your time focusing on the negatives of the fact that you've lost games. But be aware of what's happened and see how you can utilise that to better plan for what's about to happen around the corner, whether it's next season or next week.
It's the value judgment, isn't it? When you're looking back at a result and you put a value on it that says, well, we lost that game or we had a bad season. I must be a bad player. I must be a bad coach. If you put that value judgment on it, that's where it goes wrong. But if you can look back at it and say, this is what we did right. This is what we didn't quite get right. This is how we move forward. There's no value. You're not attributing any value to what happened. You're simply trying to change what happens to more towards the way you want it to go.
Yes, I think reflecting on performances is something that everyone does differently, and people always will define the result differently or define the outcome differently. We've had a pretty good example. We've had two performances at my club side over the last 2 weeks, and one we came up about 20 runs short tracing 275, so we posted 245, 250, something like that. And if you look at the result on a piece of paper, you say, well, you gave away too many runs, or you didn't bat well enough in the chase, or whatever happened. But if you actually look a little bit closer at the scorecard, you see that coming in at number six was Danny Briggs, who hit 95 off 60 balls as a first class / international cricketer, and he also took 2 for 18 off his 10 overs. And when you drop an international cricketer into club cricket and you come up 20 short, you actually think to yourself, well, how have we played there? We've actually done a little bit better than we thought, but it's not every day that an international cricketer gets parachuted into a club game, and it's not every day that Briggsy scores 90 off 60 balls either. But so you can kind of make allowances for that, and you can see glimmers of success, or a lot more than glimmers of success, really, in the performances you had. And the same thing or a similar thing happened on the weekend again, and we lost two in a row there, because this week the side we were playing against, Jimmy Adams dropped down from the Hampshire side because he wasn't selected for the last 2020 or the one day stuff, along with Joe Weatherly, who's just signed a contract for Hampshire as well, who's been released by the academy. And it made a side that we felt were beatable into a really, really strong unit. And even though we played really good cricket, we were beaten by a better side, and we're actually pretty happy with the way we played in both of those games. But in one instance, one guy's come down and he's a hell of a cricketer, especially in one day format. And the other one, they came out with a strong side, even though we've performed to the standards we wanted to. So disappointing, but still being realistic about how we've done.
Yeah, exactly. And if you learn something, we had a similar thing. We on Sunday, our development 11 played a game against a local side who were fairly even teams, except they decided to put in their overseas player for some reason in a Sunday game where the standards of cricket on show were much lower. You know, we had one guy who'd only ever played two games of cricket before, super keen, really working hard, but when he comes up when he's bowling against a guy who's played professional cricket, it's not much of a competition. So we lost that game. But, you know, what do you take from that? You can take that you learned something there. Again, you bowled against a guy who was extremely good and you had to be dead on to get a chance. And, you know, we did make a couple of chances, half chances, but we didn't get him out. But people have learned from that, and they'll develop from that. And when they come up against someone who's perhaps slightly better than them next time, they'll have more of a toolkit to draw from of experience.
Yeah, they probably don't want that every week, do they? But no. Once a season or every now and then to go, oh, this is what we need to be, or this is how good I want to be, or this is kind of what I'm going to set my targets on, then that's good exposure for them, really, isn't it?
Exactly. And if they're there, you might as well take full advantage of it rather than going, oh, well, you know, they're cheating. there's no point in doing that. Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question. 100 singles in 50 overs, no problem.
No.
Second question. The main problem with net practice is the lack of strike rotation.
No.
Third question. What matters most is how you see yourself.
Yes.
It's time now for the questions section. We dip into the mailbag every week, picking out a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show or readers of the Pitch Vision Academy website. And we answer those questions. And then at the end of the show, we pick a winner of a prize of the best question of the week, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by heading over there, pitchvision.com/academy. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And you can also get us on social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. The first question is from Ryan. And Ryan says, I hear commentators and coaches talk a lot about changes in pace as a spin bowler and how to use changes in pace as well as angles to work over a batter. I've also heard players talking about different wrist and arm angles to change the pace without changing arm speed. I'm interested to hear what you think about this and how to use changes in pace and angle to get a batter out. So changes in pace is a good one, isn't it? It's something that people say a lot, but it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do.
Well, I think we're more aware of it now since speed guns are coming at the top level, and we see it on telly, don't we? We see those subtle changes of pace throughout an over or throughout a spell. Graham Swann was very good at it, as to with Shane Warne, but Shane Warne was probably a better exponent of changing angle than he was of changing pace. His deliveries were a fairly consistent pace, but what he was phenomenal at was working through the width of the crease and having a long-term strategy about how he was going to do that. So he wouldn't just get to the end of his mark and think, oh, I'll bowl this one from slightly closer in, I'll bowl this one from slightly further out. There would be very much a strategy that he'd probably got over 10, 15 balls of what his end result is. And one of the great assets, despite the fact that he had absolute brilliant spinning delivery and everybody remembers the gatting ball and all of that, his biggest asset ultimately was patience and planning. And so an example would be that if he was going to go around the wicket and trying to exploit some rough, and he was struggling to get somebody out or somebody was beginning to play quite well, what he would do is he would start off bowling very close into the stumps from over the wicket, work his way out as far as he could without bowling a back foot no ball to wide of on the over the wicket side. And then his next ball, he'd go around the wicket and he would bowl that ball from as wide as he possibly could on the around the wicket side, to increase that angle to make the batter have to adjust the biggest that they could possibly do from a visual perspective, and then deliver the same delivery ultimately that he'd been bowling for the last 5 or 10 balls before he came around the wicket, but from a completely different angle. And that's what Warne did. You know, he used to talk about zooters and shooters and flippers and all of this sort of malarkey, but as he got older and as his body began to break down, he became a master of angles and a master of planning. And I think that's the biggest thing that you can ever teach any young bowler that's got a really good action, that's got a really good stop ball, is actually you don't need to create all of these different balls. You can just change the angles to create different balls as opposed to having to do something funky with the wrist or the hand or whatever the case may be. So that would always be my starting point. Once they've mastered that, and they want to master something else, then yeah, you can start to get a bit funky. But you know, to me, that's a fundamental. After the bowling action is sound and your stock delivery is landing in the right place, let's try and bowl that stock delivery from different places, which creates different angles, because you know that will start to deceive batters. And Shane Warne was an absolute master of that. And I think Graham Swann, one of the reasons why he came into Test cricket late was because he took his stock ball, got it really good, and then worked out angles. And he was a master
changing
at that.
Changing pace is the other one, isn't it?
At left-handers, he was an absolute master.
Same action.
At changing variations
of speed. What I see a lot in club cricket is, with a spinner anyway, is there'll be a stock delivery, there'll be a ball that they throw up a little bit more, and a ball that they really push through, almost like a seamer. And there won't be a lot of variation between those. There won't be a lot of subtlety in variations. Is that what you see as well?
Yeah, a lot of the time with guys who are a little bit more inexperienced or people that maybe don't play at quite such a high level, it becomes quite black or white almost. And people are either bowling their stock delivery, as you said, or they're firing as fast as they possibly can. And ultimately what you're doing is, if you're having a ball that's really quick or a ball that's really slow, then the really quick ball is giving people, the batsman, some visual cues in a change of action along the way somewhere, which is going to allow you to identify there's something different. Whether or not they know it's going to be a quicker ball, sometimes they'll just see a slight change in body position or arm movement or whatever it might be, and that tells them something's different here. And as a result of that, they're going to think, right, I'm just going to be a little bit more careful in this delivery because I can see there's a change. Similarly, if someone goes very slow, it gives you the opportunity to react and then make any necessary adjustments because someone's gone very, very slow. And that's where the masters of this, and again, there are obvious ones you can think about around the world, in not in English cricket, but also around the world, who maybe don't spin the ball prolifically. But Danny Vittori would be the one that would jump to mind over the last 15 or 20 years. Has consistently spun the ball a little bit, but has been able to control and adapt his pace with subtle variation, and he's become an absolute master at it. And doing that and having the success he's had without a massive, prodigious spinning ball as a spinner shows you that he's got something else in his armour and he's got something else that works. And the angles he uses are also very, very clever, but that change of pace that he's had and the ability to land the ball in the similar place but have it arrive there from a different trajectory or a different angle has been key to the success he's had over the last 15 or 20 years.
So how can we vary pace without much of a change in action?
Well, one of the guys who did it to an extreme rather than subtly, I suppose, was a guy called Jeremy Snape, who's now a sports psychologist that works within business and has worked with a number of the world's leading teams from a cricket perspective. Probably his most successful was with either Rajasthan Royals or with South Africa. But when he played, Snapey was absolutely brilliant at taking pace off a ball. And he had this ball that was called the moon ball. And effectively, everything would go through in its normal way, apart from the ball would sort of like float up in the air and would come out at about 45 miles an hour, which is pretty slow. You know, you're struggling to get the ball down the other end if you go much slower than that. But he used to do it, and this ball used to go up, and he was a master of 2020 cricket, and actually got picked for England to play 2020 cricket in the first ever 2020 World Cup. And this ball was part of his armoury, and the way that he bowled it was almost between the thumb and the first finger. Instead of the ball spinning off of his first finger, he would release the ball, and ultimately it's like bowling a slower ball, isn't it? It's running up and making sure that there's nothing behind the ball to propel it to go forward, so the arm speed remains the same. But this ball used to come out over the top of between his thumb and his first finger, so it looked like he was holding the ball properly, as he would do for his off spinner. But actually, he would bowl the ball, and it would come out of that gap, nothing to propel it from behind, and this thing would come out literally and float in the air and stay in the air for ages. Bounce, somebody would have a huge wipe at it, and they'd either get out bowled, stumped, or lob it up in the air for somebody to catch. And he had huge, huge success for Leicester in that, and then onto the international scene as well.
Next question is from Fletch. And Fletch says, I always used to be a big driver through wide mid-off and cover regions, but now I feel my only scoring areas are straight and through mid-wicket. I've changed my stance on Macliff, but still not much luck. I always feel like I'm not quite getting to the ball, and when I do connect, the ball goes a lot wider through point.
Yeah, this is a classic, isn't it? And I'm trying to picture what he looked like before. I've got an idea of what he looks like now, but it's not clear. But I should imagine that one of the reasons why you hit the ball really well through that wide mid-off and cover region was that your backswing was probably going slightly behind yourself. And so when it came through in a straight line, it would go through in that region. And it's something that happens a lot to players, and in fact happens a lot to the best players. And I remember it was always one of the things that Marcus Driscothic would come back to Somerset when I was working there, and then we'd work on when he was playing for England, when I was around him more often, was just making sure that backlift doesn't get behind themselves, particularly for left armers, obviously with the right arm over bowling at them. If that bat isn't going to come straight back down, back towards the bowler, then you're going to end up playing around yourself. And ultimately, he used to nick off when he used to pull that bat in around. But when his bat was around him, behind himself a little bit, it did open up that extra cover region, which he hit really well. So I'm imagining that you've changed your stance to try and realign your backswing. And the way you've probably done it is to open up your stance a bit and be a little bit more with that front foot, being a little bit more withdrawn, so you've got more chest and stomach pointing down the wicket than you had previously, where you probably were in a sideways on position. Now, this is great, but I'm always a bit hesitant of people changing their stance, and the main reason for that is because often the stance that they've done all the way throughout their career is the one that they feel that they move the freest. And it sounds now that you've opened yourself up or you've done something with your stance and that stops you from moving. So whilst the backswing was the original problem, you've now created yourself a movement problem. And ultimately, you know, batting is about three things. It's about vision, so you can see the ball and you can predict where it's going and you can track the ball really well. It's about movement because you need to get to that ball, and that's a bit that you're struggling with now. And the third bit is about contact. And, you know, the middle bit and the crucial bit, which is the movement bit, is failing you at the moment. So my advice to you would be to see if you can get back to your original stance. Do some really concerted work on understanding where your bat is going. And again, you know, mobile phones are fantastic for that. You can get somebody to stand in front of you, behind you in a net, you know, straight down the line, wherever it may be from, and get a really good idea of what your bat is doing. And often when it gets pulled behind, it happens because the bottom hand grip in the backswing and in the back lift is a little bit too prominent, and it pulls everything into the tummy, and then the bat goes behind. So that would be my starting point. Get back to your original stance, because that's the one that your body innately moves in a very natural fashion and can get to the ball. And do some really concerted work on understanding, going back to one of our three questions, understanding yourself. Well, this is about understanding your backswing and understand where it goes and why it goes. Have a look at that bottom hand, because it's often one of the causes of the backswing going behind yourself. And give it a go that way. And I reckon within not too long, you'll have more awareness of your backswing. You'll be able to pick it up and drop it down in the way that you want to do it. And more importantly, you'll be able to see the ball and move to a ball in a really efficient manner.
Labors, when you see a player who changes his stance of his own accord, how do you keep an eye on it to make sure that things are going according to plan? Because it obviously hasn't with Fletch.
Yeah, I guess it's making sure that there is a plan in the first place, and you're doing it for a reason, and the any change you're making is kind of justified in the whole process of what you're trying to achieve. So if you're trying to improve your movement because your movement isn't good and you're making an adjustment to it, then we can assess it by just gauging how well or how close you're getting to the ball, how well you're transferring weight, and we can put focus on that. And I think as soon as people make an adjustment to what they do, they often look straight away at the outcome, and is the outcome of hitting the ball improving or not? But you've got to remember that you at first you're actually trying to improve a process that makes up that the shot that you're playing, and if one thing changes, you'll often find that other things change around it. So there's a bit of a process or a time period there where people need to adapt and people's body needs to adapt to new positions you're putting into. And sometimes you'll find yourself putting yourself into better positions, but because you're not used to being in those positions, it still takes a little bit of time to settle down. So whether it is to improve your movement, or it is to improve your head position and vision of the ball, or whatever it might be, make sure that when you're assessing it, you're assessing the thing that you actually wanted to achieve, and you're not just assessing completely the whole outcome, as it were, and that will come a little bit later on. But yeah, definitely, first of all, go in with a plan. So don't just make a change for the sake of it, because you might be changing part of your stance when your stance is actually really solid and it's something later in the process of the shot that needs a bit of attention. So don't rush into it. Have a really good chat with your coach if you've got one there, and make sure that if you are going to make a change, you feel like you're making a change that is going to be beneficial, and it's something that's really logically sounds like it's going to make a positive impact on your cricket.
Good. Okay. Good luck, Fletch. Let us know how you get on. And now it's that time on the show when we hand over a minute of it to one of the members of the team without being interrupted by anybody else. It's called the Soapbox. And this week it's Sam Lavery. Lavers, over to you.
Okay, well, over the last 3 or 4 weeks throughout the summer, I've worked with a few different coaches that I don't usually get to work with, and a few guys that I don't spend a lot of time with all year round. And it's amazing to see some of the ideas that these guys have got. And they're not all sort of professional first-class coaches. Some of them are of a wide range of sort of coaching experience. But some of the ideas that they've had have been absolutely fantastic. Some things I've never thought of, some things I'd like to implement into my own programs, and some things I've seen other people do. But one thing I've noticed is that possibly because they don't have the time or they have other roles, they're not actually always able to implement these things into practice. And it might be that time constraints or other pressures from the groups they're coaching make life a little bit difficult. But if you do have good ideas, really try and follow them up. Really try and put them into practice. There's no point having ideas if we don't try and execute them. So really try and follow them up as hard as you can.
And that is the end of another show. We've got to the half hour mark, as we always do. Before we go, we're going to decide on a winner of this week's competition, which, if you remember, is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions available for the prize this week is Ryan's question about varying pace and angle in spin bowling, and Fletcher's question about hitting the ball through mid-off and cover, as well as through straight and mid-wicket. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Ryan's question this week. I think it's something that doesn't get talked about enough, you know, using the angles and using changes of pace, particularly angles. I'm a massive fan of angles. So, Ryan, I hope you've picked up something on that and you've got something to work on in your own right with your bowlers or is yourself as a bowler. So, Ryan, well done.
Yeah, congratulations, Ryan. And if someone else is listening to this show, Gareth, and they're thinking, you know what, I want to have a go at that as well, get the question answered, win the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also find us on all the different social medias. Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can head over to Twitter and find us at the @pitchvisionacad handle. You can also listen to the show every week just by going into your favourite podcast app on your phone or other device and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Tap on the subscribe button. You'll get us every week. And if you want to listen to the show on the website and get all the show notes as well, you can do that. Head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. And you'll see all the previous shows there and the button to click on to stream it. All the show notes, all the links, all that kind of thing, all there in one place. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas. Thanks, guys.